brightest audience in the country. I am Bub Inyer, America's most popular self-proclaimed right-wing religious fanatic, homophobic, anti-choice talk show host. Our phone number, 1-800-8-NYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. For those of you listening in cities around the country, Bub Inyer Live airs from Denver, Colorado, in our underground bunker in the foothills of the Rocky Mountains. And I got to bring you this story out of Boulder, Colorado. Boulder, a Denver suburb, hardcore liberal city. And here, there's a homosexual was convicted in Boulder yesterday and of a murder of a young girl. And so I'm just going to bring you part of the story. It's out of the Rocky Mountain News. And here we go. And then we'll go to the phones. We'll start out in Pennsylvania. Our phone number, 1-800-836-9278. But condemned to life in prison, that's what he got, life in prison, Robert Powers was led from the courtroom yesterday, still taunting the male lover whose daughter he killed to get even. So here's a homosexual who killed another homosexual's daughter to get even. All right, he gets life imprisonment without the possibility of parole. That's just tragic that he's not being executed. Let's see. The jurors saw a videotape in which this homosexual Powers, told police he had killed Angela Fuentes. She's a 19-year-old, pretty young lady. He killed her to get even with Herman Fuentes, her father, because he had dumped him. And he wanted to cause Herman Fuentes a lifetime of pain. So he stabbed the 19-year-old woman 16 times in front of witnesses at an Old Navy store where she worked as a clerk. So just before the jury read its verdict of guilty, this homosexual Powers, Robert Powers, he yelled across the courtroom to Fuentes, "Herman, Angela would be alive if it wasn't for you." He should have said, "if it weren't for you." "We wouldn't have to be here today." This story has so many sick angles, you can't even cover them all. Powers, 39 years old, was led out of the courtroom when he shouted, "Bye, Herman, have a good day." And we're not going to kill this guy? We're not going to kill this guy? So Herman Fuentes and his wife, Linda, they were in the courtroom, and Herman then bowed his head and wept as his friends comforted him. Imagine your daughter dead because you started going to some homosexual bars and started hanging out with some younger pervert, and you break up with the pervert and he kills your daughter. A store surveillance tape showed Powers buying a kitchen knife with an 8-inch blade on the morning of the murder, and the knife was then found near the victim's body. So it was a woman prosecutor, Dee Dee Mallard, and she said that anything less than this outcome would have basically demeaned what happened to Angela. It would have made little of it, made light of it, made less of it. And she just doesn't get it, does she? Anything less than the death penalty is a terrible insult to the victim. Anything less than the death penalty. Let's go to the phones, 1-800-836-9278. In Pennsylvania, in Pittsburgh, Marianne, speak your mind. Hello, Marianne. Marianne? No Marianne. All right. Well, we'll give you guys a chance to get Marianne, get that line freed up somehow. All right, our phone number, 1-800-836-9278. That's 1-800-836-9278. She's here, we know. Marianne, go ahead. No, cannot talk to Marianne. All right, I think there's a problem with the board. Some settings with the board changed today. All right, we'll figure that out. Live radio, sometimes a challenge. Okay, so that's in Colorado. That's what's going on in Colorado. Now, those of you listening, say in Rochester, New York, you're thinking, well, Colorado's a really sick place. Well, you know, if you live in Glass House, you shouldn't throw a stone. How about DeWitt, New York? This is a really sick story. That's our story sick. Here's another sick story. A 16-year-old called her sister after being missing for 6 months. And it turns out she was in a dungeon, kidnapped and raped by a 67-year-old and apparently his two sons. Now, this is just, this is an Associated Press story that's in the Denver Post. So the phone call, turns out the sister gets a call from her 16-year-old sister, hadn't seen in months. So the sister, who had not been kidnapped, called the police. And that led the police to a home that was hidden behind 20-foot-high evergreens and fenced off from the neighbors. And in that home, a 67-year-old John Chmielski, who had been widowed a few years back, he's a retired handyman with two sons. Now, I don't know if his sons were involved. Let me see. Let's see here. Speed reading the story. He is, okay. He systematically imprisoned and raped at least four young women in a two-room dungeon beginning in the late 1980s before releasing them. The 16-year-old had been held for 6 months, and he would kidnap them and bring them to the house. They didn't know where they were. He had underground rooms, cement rooms, no windows, and he'd keep them there. And then when he would release them, they had no idea where they had been. This is one sick story. All right, let's try the phone again. Marianne.
Hi, Bob.
Hello.
Hi. I'm enjoying your show.
Thank you, ma'am.
Great. I was so encouraged last night listening to you talking to Jesse.
Jesse Lee Peterson.
Mm-hmm. And in all the years that I've listened to you, watched you on TV, I've never heard you endorse another person.
Aww.
And I thought, I'm going to listen to this man. So that was really good, and it was encouraging
he
hearing
him.
He's
so great, isn't he? Hold on, Marianne. We'll be right back. Listener-supported radio right here on Bob and Yurt Live for Resurrection Sunday. We had been advertising our Mount Moriah video, the video that we've produced on the evidence for the resurrection. And I got a fax here from Information Radio Network, their headquarters in Memphis. And it's a letter to them from one of their listeners. And the letter says to my friends, you know, my friends at at IRN, Larry and Chuck Bates and others. It says, I received the video Mount Moriah. It is the most profound tape I have ever seen. The boost it gave to my faith cannot be overestimated. May God bless you and yours, your friend, Ed M. from Memphis. Hey, Ed, that's really kind of you. Thank you for letting IRN know your thoughts about this video. Mount Moriah, the evidence for the resurrection. There's a mountain of evidence for the resurrection. We've been telling people, but sometimes it's good to hear it in someone else's words. You can call us or order Mount Moriah, the video, on the internet. You could go to kgov.com, our website, kgov.com, where you can listen to these shows archived. and go to our online store, check out Mount Moriah, or call us at 1-800-836-9278, 1-800-8-N-YARDS, and order this video. It's $24.95 plus shipping and handling, money-back guarantee. Mount Moriah, the evidence for the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And that, of course, is one of a number of videos we have. Some of our best-selling videos are Mount Moriah, God and the Death Penalty, Get Out of the Matrix, A Bible Tour of Israel, Live from Las Vegas. These are really fun videos, really enjoyable. And then things like Bob Debates an Evolutionist with Dr. Eugenie Scott, and Bob Debates the ACLU Leader. He was the Colorado executive director of the ACLU, Jim Joy. That's a fun video. Confronting an Atheist. I had a 12-year-old tell me this week that he watched Confronting an Atheist with his father, and then he happened to be at university in northern Colorado and debated a college student, an atheist, and he just demolished the atheist college student. He's a 12-year-old kid. one 800 836 9278. So, Marianne.
Oh, okay.
Jesse Lee Peterson.
Yeah, I haven't tuned in yet. I just, you know, I was listening to you last night. I thought, I'm going to start listening to him on the internet. Because if you do have so many strong Christian men that you know, and I would have to believe he was good, too, because you really...
Oh, yeah, he's fun.
Yeah, he's, yeah, so I'm going to enjoy listening to him. And I heard you talking about your mother.
Yeah.
And she is, that I've met her before she remarried.
You met my mom.
Yes.
Before she married Pops.
Mm-hmm. And she is so beautiful and such a wonderful Christian woman. She's just so, and I was just really impressed. She's very, very nice, very kind.
Yeah, she is.
Gorgeous.
She's a fabulous mom.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you know, I got a haircut from her today.
Well, I got one, too, from her once.
You did?
Yes, I did.
Isn't that funny? Boy, that's a coincidence. Today, my mother cut my hair, our couple of few little ones, my wife's hair. We try to add up what we owe her. I think it's $150 for today.
She's a very, very nice woman. Well, but I enjoy your show. I enjoy hearing about your family, and we just love you, Bob. So
thank you.
I just wanted to call and say, you know, you have a great mom. Great show.
Thank you, Marianne. God
bless
you.
You're really encouraged.
Marianne, you're in Pittsburgh, Marianne. How do you tune into the show?
On the internet.
On the web.
Mm-hmm.
At kgov.com.
Yes.
All right. Thank you so much for calling.
Okay. Thank you. God bless you, Bob.
God bless you. I appreciate that. Yeah. My mom, for years now, whenever she said she needs a copy of Mount Moriah to give to Uncle Mario or, you know, God and the Death Penalty for... whoever, you know, Aunt Kay, then she says, hey, how much do I owe you? And I always say, put it on account. She says, huh? I say, yeah, put it on account of you're my mom. So, all right. 1-800-836-9278. So this is in DeWitt, New York. And the 67-year-old, apparently he did this alone. Apparently. The story's a little confusing. Obviously, not all the details are known even to the reporter who wrote the story. But the 67-year-old would kidnap women and bring them to his house, and police said they searched his house and they found photographs of women chained to a basement wall. Now, this is in DeWitt, New York. They found diaries that this John Jamelski, 67-year-old, he forced his victims to keep diaries and record such details as when they had been raped, when they could bathe, when they could brush their teeth. And what a sick freak. And this guy, he's not executed yet? He's still not executed? How many days have they had him in custody now? 3 days? He's still not executed? That is just so disgusting. He should be dead. So his house, with a dented car parked on the driveway, has a rusted flagpole in the front yard, and it's dwarfed by $500,000 homes in his community just outside of Syracuse, New York. A steel basement door leads through a series of crawl spaces and doors to two 12-foot by 12-foot rooms with 8-foot ceilings. The first chamber in the concrete bunker was furnished with a small tub and a chemical toilet. This has to be so disgusting. The second had a microwave oven and a mattress. There is an intercom and ducts for heating and electricity. The basement door was hidden behind thousands of empty beer bottles and cans neatly stacked from floor to ceiling. So he was charged, way back on April 9th, with kidnapping, rape, sexual abuse after the rescue of the 16-year-old girl. She was only able to sneak the phone call to her sister when John Jamelski, took her out to run an errand after 6 months of captivity. So prosecutors plan to present evidence to a grand jury in the cases of three other women who came forward with similar accounts. It turns out that they had been abducted, kidnapped, raped, but they didn't know where they were. And this guy is not dead yet. He's still alive. He hasn't been executed. All right, we're going to go to the phones. And in Colorado, in Denver, Colorado, Ken Scott, speak your mind. Hey, Ken, you're not in jail.
Hello there, Bob. Yeah.
Hi.
I'm very blessed. Got some good news.
This is Ken Scott, the nationally known pro-life activist. So, Ken, you were supposed to go back to jail.
Yes, well, that was actually supposed to be in January, and I've been putting motions in after motions, and I think they annoyed them a little bit, but I argued that they didn't complete my transcripts that I was supposed to be able to have so I could do my appeals.
Right.
And I put in notices to them that the transcripts were incomplete, and because of that, they were denying me my Fifth and 14th Amendment rights of due process of law. And then part of this, the judge in one motions hearing that was critical for case law and First Amendment rights.
Hey, Ken, could you speak up a little louder?
Okay, I'll try, Bob.
And our engineer is trying to figure out why we're getting feedback on the two calls in a row here.
Okay, but what took place is there was a lot of inaudibles, which means blank spaces in the transcripts when the transcriber was trying to do critical places where hearings were going on.
Right, and let's let the audience know, we have been going to an abortionist home in front of his home for, 12 years now, every holiday. And, of course, that abortionist is just beside himself with frustration. And so the police occasionally will try to arrest us, and you had a few arrests. And so you were convicted. You did some jail time, but then on your pending case, you were appealing, and the transcript wasn't complete. The judge, he never quite finished it. And so what happened then?
Well, basically, when I was in jail, then they said the transcripts were done. I had to do them immediately, have my opening brief. And I put a request in. I was in jail for an extension, and they said denied. And then I was supposed to go back for sentencing, and I put the motions in all over again, objecting that they didn't give me a chance for this.
Yeah, right. You're in jail.
Right. Well, I've been putting motion in after motion, and the district court hasn't been responding to the county court. And I've been going to the sentencing hearing every Friday or every other Friday since then to wait for a ruling. And finally, they just came to the point on Monday that I was calling in because Tuesday I was supposed to go to court to hear another hearing.
Yeah.
And I said, if they're going to postpone it again, I don't want to come sit in court all the time. And they called back and said they were postponing it until May 27th. And I said, this is totally ridiculous. And asked them to have the judge read the motions that show that he's the one that's responsible. He didn't try to respond to filling in these inaudibles that he said he would do.
In other words, they didn't complete the transcript, and it's the judge's fault.
Part of his fault, yes.
Right.
And so I got a call on Tuesday when we were protesting, Joe and I, down at the abortion clinic, and they said the judge looked at this and he decided he was willing to go ahead and tell me I could do the rest of my time in home detention at this point if I wanted it instead of going to jail. And I told him I didn't want that.
Right.
I wanted to have this basically dismissed, or it should be mistrial or a retrial.
Right.
Or they came back and said, asked me, well, what would you want to do? And I suggested at this point, just to have it done and over with, that since I've already spent time in jail, normally no one gets time in jail for reading their Bible on the sidewalk, and I have two identical ones that were pending for jail time.
Yeah, right.
Just go ahead and have it time served, and then I would withdraw my appeal notices.
And so they agreed?
Yes, they agreed. So
wow.
There's no more jail time for me, and it's been a way just to do lots of motions hearings to annoy them and confound them and confuse them. And I've won other cases like this, actually, Bob.
So
too.
All these motions. So maybe the pro-life theme song could be Do the Locomotion.
Well, or a lot of these pretrial hearings, which are all trying to set up case law and, you know, First Amendment rights, a lot of times if they lose any of those transcripts or they lose any of the records, it's automatically grounds for dismissal or grounds for retrial, which
right.
is a way to confound and confuse them, which is works.
Hey, Ken, this reminds me that this weekend I'm going to South Bend, Indiana to speak.
Yes,
at the,
I've been listening to that. That sounds neat.
Yeah, to speak at the Marriott on Christianity and Public Policy. And
yes.
When I used to live in South Bend doing Bob and Yurt Live from a TV studio at LaCie Broadcasting. And, I had a problem here in Colorado where the police were arresting me for spanking our kids.
I can recall that one.
And so when that was in the news, the South Bend Police Department told me they were going to charge me with child abuse for spanking in South Bend. And they called me into the police department, and I went in, and they said, Mr. Enyart, we want you to tell us if you've ever spanked your kids here in South Bend, because we have reports, da-da-da. And I said, well, I don't want to be disrespectful, but I've been through this, and I'm not going to tell you guys anything. And so the woman detective, she said,
yes.
Well, then you're going to have to, if you won't talk to us, you're going to have to get an attorney. And I said, well, I don't want to be disrespectful, but I really hate attorneys. I'm not going to get an attorney. And she said, well, you either have to talk to us or get an attorney. So I said, well, I'm not going to do either. And she said, well, Mr. Enyart, it's up to you what happens next. And I said, oh, good. I think I'll go home. And she was beside herself, but that's what happened. I went home, and that was the end of it.
Unfortunately, there's a lot of bad officers out there. There are good ones, Bob, but there's just anything.
There are great police officers.
And they just try to intimidate all the time.
Yeah, right.
And they have that political correctness to try to slow down any Christian activity.
Yeah. Hey, Ken, you know what? When that happened, that was right after a South Bend Police Department spokesman. Now, I shouldn't be telling these stories a few days before I'm going to South Bend.
Yes, but, of course, Bob.
But at least they won't know where I am because I'll be at the Marriott. I don't think the South Bend police could find the Marriott. But when we come back from this break, I'm going to tell you, Ken. Could you hang on a minute?
Sure, Bob.
All right, I got to tell you what happened there.
Okay.
1-800-836-9278. 1-800-836-9278. Yeah, I guess I'm not a fan of the South Bend Police Department. But when we get back on the show with Ken Scott, I got to tell him about what they did there with a police department spokesman. So remind me, all right? When we get back on the air, I'm going to tell him about the South Bend Police Department spokesman, something he said in the local newspaper. Okay, now, we got this fax today from the Information Radio Network, and what a neat letter from Ed from Memphis, Tennessee, because we've been advertising the Mount Moriah video on the IRN network. We've been selling the Mount Moriah videos, and we get this letter, and it says, to my friends at IRN, I got the video Mount Moriah. It is the most profound tape I have ever seen. The boost it gave to my faith cannot be overestimated. May God bless you and yours, your friend Ed M. from Memphis, Tennessee. Wow. That is just awesome. Ed, thank you. That's so encouraging. Man, is that encouraging. That's really neat. You know, we've been telling people that this Mount Moriah video is a tool not only to strengthen your own faith, but to reach others, to let other people see the evidence that still exists for the resurrection. It's just awesome how much evidence there is. And faith is not supposed to be blind faith. It's supposed to be faith based upon evidence. That's what the New Testament says. Faith is the evidence of things unseen. So check out Mount Moriah, the video. Welcome back. Bob and Yurt Live, 1-800-836-9278. The Yemeni man who killed three nuns 5 years ago was just executed today by firing squad. All right. Now, hey, Ken Scott.
Yes, Bob.
So, Ken, just real quickly, the South Bend Police Department spokesman was quoted in the South Bend Tribune a few years back. I was doing the show out of that city. And he said they asked him about all the murders because South Bend was having murder after murder after murder. And he said that he had been on the force for 20 years and really everything, nothing has changed. It's just now we talk about it more. And I had a hard time believing that. So I went back to the South Bend Tribune 20 years earlier to the day. And that night on TV, I compared the two newspapers, and the 20 years earlier South Bend Tribune and the entire paper, there was no crime mentioned until you get to maybe page 17, there was a purse snatching. Uh-huh. And in that day, South Bend Tribune, there were three different murder stories unrelated on the front page.
Yes, it was exaggeration of what it used to be like and what it really is now compared to what it was.
Yeah, the murder rate had gone from about 6,000 a year in the 70s to 16,000 a year in the 80s to in the early 90s, it was over 24,000 a year, 22,000 a year. It had skyrocketed. And they had been saying, well, it's always been this way. We just never talked about it before. That was the 90s. Maybe he had never heard of the 80s. What did he think? The 80s were a repressed decade? How about the 70s? Maybe he never heard of the 60s. So anyway,
yes, just lots more moral decay all the time, Bob.
Yeah, and it gets me upset when people for government officials and the police will want everyone to be accepting the status quo of a murder epidemic. Oh, there's nothing to worry about. There's always been 20,000 murders a year. It's just good old-fashioned American tradition. That's why, you know, the South Bend Police Department sort of made me sick. So anyway, Ken, what does that have to do with your story?
Well, I can understand how frustrating it is, Bob.
Yeah.
We, Joe and I face that all the time. And I want to also say thank you to you and your audience for the letters and the prayers while I was in jail. And that meant a lot to Joe and myself.
Well, I'm so glad to hear that. And so you'll be out among the living for a while.
Right. But what this did when I was going to court all the time, I get it. I had a ministry to the judges and the district attorneys because I give them a sermon with every motion. So with the motions hearing and in the trial, there was a lot of sermons. So hopefully some of that would plant. I don't know. With most of them, they just want to try to keep their image with all the other judges that they want to ignore that there is a God and that they're going to answer to him on Judgment Day.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's going to be good. Hey, Ken,
have you
Scott,
talked about Jason yet?
Jason Troyer, no. We should let the audience know that, you know, we've been going to an abortionist home every holiday for 12 years now, has it been? 12 years.
Yes.
And we go Christmas, New Year's Day, Easter, Mother's Day, July 4th, Memorial Day, Labor Day, Thanksgiving. We go to the abortionist home for, you know, Christians have been doing this for years. It's called home visitation. And we go so that young medical students will realize that if they become child killers, they may have people at their homes Christmas morning. Lunatics of the worst sort. People like Bob Enyart. So anyway, Ken, we think that we've been somewhat successful in discouraging young med students from becoming abortionists.
Well, that's very definitely true because there were 3 out of 4 of the abortionists that used to work for Planned Parenthood, I believe, that have quit because of those pickets.
Here in Denver, that's right. And all around the country, the abortionists are getting older, the average age. And even though the vast majority of med students are pro-abortion, it's hard to get them to become abortionists. You know, people don't picket a dermatologist at his home.
It definitely makes them think about going into that occupation.
Yeah.
When they could have people outside their house all the time exposing them what they do.
So this past Sunday at Denver Bible Church, we had a wonderful service. It was a lot of fun. In fact, we had 108 people there, which Denver Bible Church was planted with 30 people by Derby Bible Church across town just 3 years ago. So we had a neat turnout. And then after the service, Jason Troyer did the announcement during church, and he said that we were going to have a home visitation after the service. And so a number of us went to the abortionist house, and Jason Troyer, what happened to him? I was there, but Ken, you tell it. What happened to him?
Well, basically, there was a group that went to protest again, and there was a little bit of a commotion. One of the reasons why Ron Brock, which has a van and it's got huge posters all over it, he's from California that was visiting from out of town, and he drove his van into the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And because of that, it brought more police than ever to try to see what was going on with his van, and they tried harassing him. And Jason this day turned out, instead of going there with any signs or any buttons saying he is a protester, he just took a video camera to expose what was going on in the neighborhood.
To document. And
to
basically
document everything.
Basically, he was a reporter for KGov radio.
Exactly.
As a journalist. So he was there, even though he is a Christian pro-lifer, he was there on that day in his capacity as a journalist. He works, you know, he works for the media. And he was there with his video camera. He's a professional videographer. He has a degree in it. So he was a reporter. And so then what happened?
Well, basically, at this point, they were trying to harass Ron. And Jason went over to videotape it. And they told him Jason had to keep moving because of their ordinance. And at that point, Jason was telling them he is a reporter and he wasn't protesting.
Right.
And because of that, they said, you have been a protester, and if you don't move, we're going to arrest you. And as it turned out, the way the ordinance is written, they have to give a written warning each time that you're there, every time that you go, if you happen to violate it, and it has to document which house it's in front of and everything like that. Hmm. Well, Jason didn't move, and they arrested him.
They arrested him for not moving along.
Right.
Yeah, even though, and he was saying, hey, I'm not protesting, I'm a journalist here. But okay, so.
It's just a form of harassment again, Bob.
Yeah.
And basically what they also did, they ended up giving him a restraining order after he went to jail to say he can no longer to go into that neighborhood. It's
right.
Just another way to try to stop people from being able to protest in the neighborhood. And he had a bond of $360, which is terribly ridiculous. It's normally in Denver or anywhere else, it'd be $100 if it was true, but it wasn't even true.
Right.
But one thing that was nice, afterwards, we met you, and we went over to the jail. And when we put up the money afterwards, we protested outside because they saw all those large signs outside.
Yeah.
Within a half hour, they had released Jason. So they didn't like all those signs outside their jail. I believe that was one of the reasons why they released him right away.
Yeah. Well, that was nice. And so now, you know, if Jason is going to court every week that he goes to court or he goes to jail, we're going to have to go back to the abortionist neighborhood.
Right.
Because,
or we can,
you know,
have a ticket right at the courthouse, well, after this is going on or during it and everything else.
Yeah, well, I like to go back to the neighborhood because obviously when we get arrested as pro-life Christians, that tells us something, that we're not good at what we do, and practice makes perfect. If at first you don't succeed, try again. So if Jason's in jail or if he has to go to court, each time we will go back an extra lesson to the abortionist neighborhood, to Edward Patrick O'Loughlin's home, the Planned Parenthood abortionist. We'll go back there just so we can get it right.
Well, at the same time, I don't believe Jason will ever go to trial. This will be dismissed before he gets in for a trial. If there's any motion hearing that goes on beforehand, it will show that they violated his rights for being out there
right.
to begin with.
Well, could
and
you
also, it yeah. didn't even follow the ordinance's rule.
They didn't even follow their own rules. Yeah,
correct.
I think you're right. Now, hey, Ken, could you teach Jason to do the locomotion?
Well, I think he does very good in court as well. And
right.
then he's also had some good attorneys. And there's one that's working with Joe and with him on something right now that this will maybe all go together that can bring a good civil rights lawsuit on trying to deny the First Amendment rights to protest.
And of a journalist.
Yes.
Yeah, very good. Hey, Ken, thank you for telling that story also.
Well, you should have Jason on. He's the better spokesperson about his own event.
Yes. Hey, thank you so much,
Ken
Scott.
Thank you very much, Bob, and God bless you.
Appreciate that. God bless you. All right, now we're going to go to a break, and we'll be back for the last segment of the show. We've got a few more stories here, and I want to finish this one in New York. Well, the Dixie Chicks are all upset. They told Diane Sawyer on ABC, maybe we'll get to that in a bit, criticizing the president during a time of war, during a just war, while they're overseas. All right, let's see here. So, Information Radio Network got a fax about our video, Mount Moriah. Have you seen the Mount Moriah video, The Evidence for the Resurrection? Okay, maybe you've seen it. But has every person you know seen it? Has everyone you know seen the Mount Moriah video? Oh, that's not mandatory. I'm just kidding a bit. But really, it's 2 hours of the evidence for the resurrection. And so if you need to be better able prepared to give an answer to those who ask, or more able to witness to unbelievers, or perhaps there's someone you could hand the video to and say, hey, watch this. It's the Mount Moriah video, The Evidence for the Resurrection. We just got this fax today from IRN. And this letter is addressed to the Information Radio Network. And, dear friends, I got the video Mount Moriah. It is the most profound tape I have ever seen. The boost it gave to my faith cannot be overestimated. May God bless you, your friend, Ed M. from Memphis, Tennessee. I'll give you Ed's phone number, 901-3... No, I'm kidding. We only do that to the people who harass us. So, at any rate, we've heard this from so many people, how encouraged they are to see a video that lays out evidence for the resurrection. And the evidence that remains to this day is overwhelming. The evidence is overwhelming for the resurrection. And it's somewhat sad that Christians are not aware of it, of all the evidence. And here's a two-hour video laying out the evidence. And that's what faith is. Faith is the evidence of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. That's what faith is. That's what faith is. So cool. So give us a call, 1-800-8-NUR, or go on the web to kgov.com in the online store and order Mount Moriah. Well, Diane Sawyer has an interview with the Dixie Chicks, and they're tearfully saying how sorry they are. Natalie Maines, that she's sorry about her comment about President Bush. And, hey, when your country's at war, and it's a just war. That's the important caveat there. And it's a just war, and you criticize your government. Now, what did she said what she said right before the war, wasn't it? You know, I forget the date of when that ditz said what she did, but the backlash has been severe. It's costing them millions of dollars. Imagine that, something costing you millions of dollars for saying something wrong. That's happened to me. Okay, so New York, you guys in New York, you were thinking, boy, Colorado's messed up. Well, this 67-year-old guy, John Jamelski, was charged on April 9th. Oh, they just criticized the president during a live concert in London, was it? And said, you know, they were disrespectful to the president. Oh, and she said that she was ashamed that the president was from Texas. That's what she said. And the Dixie Chicks are from Texas, right? And they said they were ashamed that the president was from Texas. That's so stupid. Anyway, this John Jamelski in DeWitt, New York, was charged on April 9th. That's the same day Saddam's statue fell in Baghdad, with kidnapping, rape, and sexual abuse after the 16-year-old girl was rescued. And now the interesting thing is now there are four different girls, women, with the same story. At least two of the victims were teenagers, and they had histories of running away from home. So when they were missing, it wasn't necessarily a big investigation because, well, they were running away from home again, so it seemed. And one woman, who's now 28 years old, told a newspaper in Syracuse, the Post Standard, that she was high on drugs when she accepted a ride from Jamelski in 2001. And after she was released, 2 months after captivity, she went to the police but was unable to lead them to the house. Just startling that these things happen. And now this guy was charged April 9th. I don't understand why it's April 23rd. Why hasn't he been executed yet? I don't get it. I'm so confused. Why hasn't he been executed yet? I don't get it. Why didn't they have the trial on April 9th and April 10th and then execute him on April 11th? I just don't get it. What's going on with the system? Why is it breaking down in this case? Why is he still alive? You know, the FBI, a different story. Now let's go out to California. The FBI was paying an informer about $200,000 a year for 20 years, a Chinese woman, to spy on China. But it turns out that she was a double agent, and she was really spying on us. And she had developed sexual relationships with two different FBI agents. They weren't only FBI agents. They were counterintelligence agents. And she was able to steal U.S. secrets for the Chinese government. She gave the Chinese officials the name of an FBI agent who went to China in 1992. His name was William Cleveland Jr., and he was the lead agent in an investigation targeting China's efforts to steal our neutron bomb plans, or, you know, the plans for how to build a neutron bomb. And this FBI agent had been having an affair with this Chinese woman, Katrina Leung. He'd been having an affair with her for a long time, for 4 or 5 years. And so that, by the way, that's one reason why adultery, fornication, there used to be a big stigma against it. You wouldn't be qualified to be the president if you were sexually immoral. At least that's the way it was supposed to work, because then you were susceptible to being blackmailed. And if you were an FBI agent or a scientist or even an official in a town or a city, you were supposed to be morally upright, because otherwise you could be seduced and used pretty easily. And then you could use your power and influence as a governing official to help the criminals. It's just a disaster what has become acceptable in our country. I remember when I was in South Bend, Indiana for 4 years? How much of this stuff had been going on and all the immorality that passed as completely acceptable. Just so gross. Of course, it's everywhere, but just thinking of South Bend because of coming back to the Marriott this weekend, where we will be perfectly safe and free from any harassment because of the secretive nature of the location of the conference. Now, we know that we have the brightest audience in the country, and so you guys out there in Radioland, our listeners, we know that you can find the South Bend Marriott. We just picked that location so we'd be safe from harassment. Actually, me. I'm the only one that had to be concerned. Okay, let's see. What else? And then there's in Pennsylvania, we just had a call from Pittsburgh, right? I'm trying to pick only cities that relate to the listeners of this show. Was it last night we had a call from California? Was that the night before? Now here in Pennsylvania, we'll do this story because we had a Pennsylvania call tonight. A man obsessed with his teenage niece killed her parents and kidnapped her. This was just Sunday. That's Easter. Resurrection Day. 42-year-old guy in Rearsburg, Pennsylvania, murdered his wife's brother, his brother-in-law, and that guy's wife, and kidnapped their 13-year-old daughter, with whom he had a sexual obsession. And then the brother-in-law gave a description. Before he died, he told people who shot them. And so the police put out an all-points bulletin, and the murderer's truck was spotted, and they laid out in the road, they laid out those, what is it called? Tack strips? Is that what they call it? Is that the official technical name? All right. Yeah, the police, that's what they did. They laid out, I'll call it by the technical name, the tire flattening device. And thankfully, they stopped his vehicle, his pickup truck. And also, we're glad that he released the 13-year-old girl, but then continued to hold the police at bay, it says here in this Associated Press story, for some hours. That he, during the standoff, he stepped in and out of his pickup truck, at times holding a shotgun to his chin. Now, come on now. If you're holding a shotgun to your chin, that's not a real standoff. Sorry. That just doesn't qualify as a bona fide standoff. If he's holding a shotgun to his chin and he's a murderer, he just kidnapped a 13-year-old girl, then you just walk up to him. That's all you do. You just walk up to him. While you're pointing your gun at him, you walk up to him. And either he shoots his head off, or if he motions the gun toward you, you shoot him. That's it. And then that case would be resolved. Now, what do we have? 5 years of trials and appeals? 12 years to go? He's 42. He'll probably die of old age. Maybe on death row. It's the leading cause of death on death row, old age. All right. So we see why sexual immorality needs to be restigmatized and recriminalized. Adultery, fornication, homosexuality. We've got Rick Santorum, a Republican senator from Pennsylvania. Now, he's from this state, right? Pennsylvania, where this guy just murdered these two people and kidnapped a 13-year-old for sexual obsession. And Rick Santorum, thankfully, he said something that was slightly anti-homosexual. It's really startling that he said it, and he's experiencing a firestorm of criticism because of it. But he said, this is what he said against homosexuals. He said, I have no problem with homosexuality. Now, this is what he said that's brought a firestorm of criticism against him. He said, I have no problem with homosexuality. I have a problem with homosexual acts. It's pretty interesting. I tell you, nowadays, that qualifies as the boldest statement of the year. Nowadays, for a politician, that's the boldest statement of the year, saying, I have no problem with homosexual sexuality. Oh, boy. Just the acts. How about pedophilia? I have no problem with pedophilia. Are you going to hire a pedophile to work in a nursery just as long as he doesn't act it out? Now, see, we're even there in the boldness we're dancing. This is Bob Inyart reminding you to do right and risk the consequences.